For the second year in a row, research finds that the life expectancy for newborns in Wisconsin is inching downward. The projected average age for a baby born today is 80 years old. That's down from 80.1 a couple years back, 80.2 just before that. Those changes are pretty small, but they suggest that long trends of increasing life expectancy are tapering off. The report attributes this to a number of issues, including alcohol and opioid use and rising suicide rates. Our next guest is here to break down the data and talk about what policies could maybe change the course. Dr. Patrick Remington is Professor Emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Patrick, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back. Thanks.
Well, seeing these numbers here in Wisconsin, it seems to fit in with a lot of what we've talked about before when we look at national numbers. How does this all fit together?
Yeah, there are two different trends in the nation and in Wisconsin in changes in death rates. We've seen steady declines in the death rates due to leading causes of death like heart disease, stroke, and even cancer. But there have been increases in the causes of death that occur predominantly in young people. Opioid overdose, suicide, deaths related to alcohol abuse and misuse. So they're really two different trends. And because the increasing death rates in young people have overtaken the progress that we see, the continued progress of declining death rates in older people, so that life expectancy on average is now declining.
Right. It should be absent to those causes of death younger in life, the addiction, the suicide. This should be a time of celebration. We're really putting a dent in what have for years been the leading causes of death in the United States, right?
Over the last century, life expectancy has increased 25 years. And virtually all of that has been due to advances in major public health advances, eliminating or significantly reducing causes of childhood death, and then reducing the leading causes of death, heart disease and stroke predominantly.
Smoking or reducing smoking, I imagine, is part of that story.
We've cut smoking rates in half over the last 50 years, and smoking-related cancers have been declining in men for about 15 years and women just in the last 5 or 10 years.
So there's all that good news, but we're seeing the rates of death because of addiction, alcohol, suicide, enough to overcome, or to start to turn the tide on those gains and move the needle downward again.
Yeah, and these are not just slight increases in deaths related to opioids and suicide and alcohol abuse. These are dramatic increases. These are threefold, four, fivefold increases. In some areas, they've gone up tenfold. And according to the report we just saw on your website, Wisconsin is leading the nation in some of these increases, particularly in Milwaukee County.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington from UW-Madison, looking at mortality trends here in Wisconsin and around the country. Let's talk about that. In Milwaukee County, the report talked about deaths because of opioid addiction-related issues. A lot of the talk recently about opioids has focused on rural America, and that's true. Things are happening there, but it's kind of overshadowed what's also going on in urban areas. What do we see in Milwaukee County?
Well, the major finding is that no group, no race, region, or gender is spared from this epidemic. There have been greater increases predominantly in whites in rural America, but the increases, you're talking about a fivefold increase as opposed to a fourfold increase. So I think the major take-home message is this is an epidemic that has really taken hold in nearly every sector of society, urban, rural, rich and poor, white and black.
I saw some numbers pretty recently that said, okay, for the first time in the most recent data year, I don't remember if it was 2017 or 18, we saw the number of overdose deaths go down in Wisconsin for the first time in a few years. Is that a sign of hope or just maybe a statistical blip?
No, I think it is a sign of hope because the rates were leveling off and now begin to decline. Again, that's after a significant increase. Mm-hmm. So we're clearly not yet out of the woods. But it's typical of many large public health problems. They brew really for decades, the lung cancer epidemic and the smoking epidemic of the 1960s. We didn't see that turn in the death statistics until the 1990s. And we still see 300 or 400,000 people die from smoking every year. So that problem hasn't gone away, but it's been significantly reduced. And I think you'll see the same thing with opioid and deaths and suicide, is that we may begin to understand the causes and maybe putting effective programs into place. But it's just going to turn the numbers very slightly. And we're nowhere near where we need to be.
So opioid deaths and suicide, you just said lump in alcohol there, which we'll talk about separately in a few moments. But you've talked to me in the past about, I think you call it, diseases of despair.
Yeah, there's no question that a common element of this epidemic of opioid and alcohol and drug-related deaths is that people have despair, that people have mental health issues, and it's related to challenges in educational opportunities and jobs and low-income jobs, not being able to access effective and accessible mental health services. And so the causes are multitude, but the effect is that there's despair. And readily available pain medicines, either legally prescribed or illegally obtained on the street, is a way for the population really to treat the pain. And by doing so, it's a solution, it's a quick solution, a short-term solution that leads to tremendous problems down the road. And eventually, overdose deaths are the result.
Check me on this to see if this is a fair assessment. It seems like the last few years, we've done a lot to address that supply issue, trying to cut back on the amount of opioids that get prescribed. Of course, drug interdiction efforts targeting fentanyl and other drugs coming across our borders, that seems to get a lot of attention. Is there enough attention on the other half of the equation you just mentioned, that mental health access, mental health care access to help people with that underlying despair that might lead them to reach for the opioids in the first place?
I think complex problems like the opioid epidemic and suicide require complex solutions. We should take care of the simple things first. And clearly, prescribing practices were out of control. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a monitoring system. People were able to get access to pain meds when they didn't need them. And so we've started to fix that problem. But that doesn't – that's really almost a symptom of the despair and the reason people seek these substances. And suicide, again, readily available ways, lethal means to kill oneself, firearms predominantly for men. So that's one potential solution, but we need to understand ways to address the root causes, the reason that people have despair, the reason that people have mental health issues. And so, again, let's do the simple things first. But then move on to understanding the root causes and starting to address those.
We'll get into that a little more. I want to turn to alcohol for a minute. Opioids all over the headlines the last few years. I don't think that's a surprise to people that we're seeing more deaths because of that. Alcohol, I think here in Wisconsin, we think, yeah, we might have a problem with alcohol. We've always had a problem. But it sounds like, do I have this right, alcohol-related deaths are increasing.
Yeah, and again, alcohol-related deaths from alcohol poisoning and long-term alcohol abuse are increasing. Motor vehicle crashes related to alcohol are also increasing. So many of these public health problems have solutions, but the minute you, in effect, take your foot off the accelerator and stop addressing them, they come back. So we did a great job of reducing alcohol-related motor vehicle crashes through enforcement and through prevention programs, but that will undoubtedly come back as use patterns change and as public health priorities shift.
As use patterns change, are we drinking more?
We're not really drinking more. It's really a question of problem drinking. So Wisconsin leads the nation in per capita alcohol consumption, but also leads the nation in binge drinking. So, there's alcohol is clearly a substance that we can't ban. That was we tried that 80 years ago, and it didn't work. But it's a substance that needs to be controlled, and we need to look at reducing problem drinking behavior.
Do we in Wisconsin acknowledge that we have a problem with binge drinking? A comment that sticks with me from years ago when we did a segment about binge drinking, looked at the statistics and said, oh, well, if you call 5 or 6 nights in a binge or 5 or 6 drinks in one night a binge, well, of course, we all binge drink, as though that was like the normal level.
Yeah, many problems like binge drinking and high rates of alcohol consumption in Wisconsin are deeply embedded in our culture. And people from Wisconsin don't even realize that it is a public health problem. You know, you can get alcohol in our student union. There are many colleges across the country where that wouldn't be possible. You get alcohol at the end of most athletic events and fun runs. Right here, you know, the Crazy Legs run. Alcohol is served just across the finish line. That's normative for Wisconsin and for, you know, our community. And so that's deeply embedded in our culture. And so that you need to think about not just, you know, the specific problem drinkers, but how deeply that pattern is in culture that everybody experiences.
We're talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus of the Department of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison. He's with us to talk about a new report on life expectancy in Wisconsin showing a slight decline over the last few years, in part, large part, because of alcohol, opioids, and suicide. Patrick, let's get back to mental health care and coverage in Wisconsin. You're talking about that as maybe the longer-term solution to a lot of these problems. What do we have? Where do we need to get?
Well, mental health services have for a long time been outside of the traditional health care realm. We, for decades, had a cap on mental health services that when you reached a certain amount, I think it was $10,000, that was a lifetime cap for mental health care. Clearly, that's not a health care system that thinks about getting good outcomes from people who have a brain disease. So we've clearly turned the corner on providing insurance coverage for people with mental health services, but insurance coverage isn't enough. We need more providers, and we need better access to those providers, a better entry system from primary care to mental health care. And you talk to people who try and navigate the mental health care service system that we have, and it's very challenging. There are long delays. People aren't able to get into the system when they need to. And so we just need to fix the problem with a poor supply of mental health providers and accessible health care so that it's where people live and work and can access that care.
Do we know what works for someone who might have both an underlying mental health concern and an addiction problem, whether it's alcohol or opioids or something else?
Well, we have evidence-based programs. There's clearly healthcare services and treatment protocols that work for people with either addiction problems or mental health problems or both. They're obviously not perfect. They don't work all the time, but they work for many patients. But what doesn't work is that if people aren't accessing those evidence-based services. So the most important thing is to improve the evidence through research and finding programs that work and policies that can help provide funding. But then the other thing is to actually get people into care by having more care available.
And I've heard sometimes even from callers, I was able to get access to treatment for 30 days or 60 days.
Yeah, again, it's not a complete wraparound service. And the frustrating thing is that if you had a coronary artery bypass or if you have cancer, there's no question that that care is going to be there when you need it, and it's going to be there for the entire course of treatment. We just treat mental health services and mental health care differently. We have this idea that it should be short-term and that people don't have a chronic disease. And it's clearly a chronic illness that needs to be cared for over the life course. And that is a culture change. We need to take away the stigma from having mental illness so that people can access it freely. Most people who commit suicide, most people who overdose have expressed that need for care in the past. And it's just, you know, if you don't pay attention to what people need, eventually problems result.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Eric is with us in Springer. Eric, hi. Nope. Eric's gone. He wanted to say it seems like it could be easier to get opioids than, say, less harmful substances out there. Have we made it less easy for people to access opioids?
There's some talk about the pendulum swinging too far to make it very difficult. And I was just talking with Dr. John Tempty, the Associate Dean for Public Health now in the School of Medicine and Public Health. And as a clinician, he found that if people who needed opioids had trouble getting them, that they often resorted to illegal means. And those can be deadly. So that you need to have a balance of not providing opioids when they're not needed, but when they're needed to provide it in a very careful way in a care system with a close relationship with your primary care provider.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington from UW-Madison, looking at a report showing life expectancy going down over time in the last few years here in Wisconsin after years of increases, largely related to things like alcohol, opioid drug addiction, and suicide. We've talked about the numbers when it comes to alcohol and opioids. What's happening with suicide numbers, Patrick?
Well, again, suicide is a symptom of mental health problems. And so what we've seen with young rates of suicide is that rates are going up, particularly in people living in rural areas. And you also see sort of two ends of the spectrum. Suicide rates are higher in older men. And again, the common element is that people have expressed problems. There's been almost always some message that people are having challenges and are depressed, but that message doesn't come through. And there are times when care is provided and an individual will eventually commit suicide despite everything you do. And families who have struggled with this know this is the case, that you do everything you can and still an individual takes their life. But many more times there are people who just don't get the care, don't have the support that they need. And so the key is to understand when individuals are hurting that they need care and you need to talk about it more, not less.
A caller who can't come on the air with us says she's a licensed mental health provider. It's a scarce resource, especially in her part of the state. And there's a societal unwillingness to put enough resources into mental health care.
It's a longstanding stigma. In fact, we call it mental health. In a way, we don't want to talk about mental disease or mental disorders. We don't mind talking about cancer and heart disease as diseases, but we have the sense that we should just talk about mental health issues and mental health treatment. It is a disorder and a disease, and it needs treatment. And we have 20, 30, 50 years of stigma so that we don't treat it as a mental health condition, as a health condition. And we don't provide the provider network that is needed, particularly as the caller or the listener said, in rural and underserved areas.
Is part of the problem that there's often a moral stigma attached to things like addiction and maybe even suicide, that there is a moral judgment being made that might cloud our public health judgment?
There's absolutely a moral judgment. It's viewed as a moral failing that somebody who has an addiction problem, it's true in obesity, that we feel that this is not a disease, that it's a problem with a weak moral or personal character. And that's clearly not the case. So that we really need to understand the root causes, understand that individuals have a role in their own care, but they can't do it alone. And that's when a care team and having the right professionals in place in communities makes the difference.
All right, so we've got this study, this number that is definitely worrisome. Life expectancy is going down. What are you watching for in the future to see if we bend the arc back the other way?
Well, one thing is to make sure that reports like this continue, and not just for the nation and not just for Wisconsin, but every community can look at their own reports. We do a county health rankings in at the university, and each year communities can look at how their health is determined. And so community by community should look at this problem, because the solutions in Milwaukee County are going to be different than the solutions in Menominee County or Marinette. So that's clearly the approach that works the best, is to understand the problem in your community, understand what resources you have, and then look for ways to bring those resources to bear to address the issue.
Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Patrick Remington is Professor Emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison. He joins us today to talk about the latest report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum that found life expectancy in the state going down in large part because of alcohol, opioids, and suicide.